Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Vonna Pfeiffer.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for the needlework artist. And our artist this week, Heartfelt Designs, Carol Story. Hi, Carol.
Hello. How are you today?
We're okay. Thanks for doing this. Regina, Saskatchewan. Regina.
Yeah.
Okay.
Regina.
See, I should have asked ahead of time. Regina. Yeah. Farm community?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Just regular folks.
Yep. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Never been to Saskatchewan or that part of Canada at all. That's, I'm sure, beautiful.
It is beautiful here.
And so your great aunt visited you long ago and taught you crochet.
She was crocheting a doily or something, and I asked her to show me how to do that, and she showed me, and I was just kind of carried on after that. After she left, I found books and everything to teach myself how to do it. So
she taught you, and then you just took it upon, you just took it yourself then?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So you move on from crochet. What moves you on to needlework?
When I was living in Brandon, Manitoba, I went to a craft sale there one day, and I saw somebody with Petit Point jewelry, and I was just fascinated by the stitches and so on, and I asked her if she could show me how, and so I went and visited her. You know, Brandon's a small city, so relatively safe, and so I went and visited with her, and she showed me how to do it, and then I went to the local needlework store and bought some stuff, and so I started doing Petit Point jewelry on 40 count mesh.
That was your start.
That was my start.
Usually that's something people migrate to.
Right. And then I moved on to doing needlepoint. And a couple of my first pieces were like these huge, you know, 18 by 20 size piece pictures. So I certainly went from one extreme to the other.
Oh, my word. It must have felt like working on a fence. Yeah. So the Petit Point, did you design your own designs or were you using other people's?
I just used other people's in the Petit Point, and in the needle point.
Then make them for friends and sell them or what?
I made them for friends and, you know, family. And then I did sell some over the years too and so on, but made
them for friends till it was, oh no, not another one. Stop it.
That's right.
Yeah. That's the trouble with those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So then you move on to needlepoint. Now this must have been in the day where most needlepoint was done with wool.
I believe it was done with wool. Yeah. But I did the very early pictures. Yeah. I, you know, bought a huge kit kind of thing and did it that way rather than buying individual skeins. So
yeah, the old dimension kits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was what we had. I mean, I did several of those myself. And the first time I went into a real needlepoint store with painted canvas and high quality wool and priced out what my project was going to cost, I went running back to dimensions in a hurry. Because we used to be able to get them. Well, I don't know. I don't even know if you still can. I haven't bought one in ages, but used to get them at a Michaels or a hobby store, and we had one near us. So I could just stand for hours and peruse all the kits. And
I think at that time we had, if I remember the names, Alice Godkin and Babs Furman. They were designers of Petit Point and needlepoint and so on. I think that was the people who did the kits, but don't recall that for sure. It was a number of years ago.
Yeah, that was kits was where I learned be careful how many mistakes you make because you'll run out of yarn or thread.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It turned me off on kits in general. Anyway, I always fear I'm going to run out. So you still do now. Needlepoint has stayed with you even to today. You do a lot of that.
Well, more needlework, not the needle point as in the continental stitch, but, you know, canvas work and so on, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I should split that up. And to me, it all, once you put it on canvas, it becomes needle point. And,
right.
But it canvas work. And so that remains your love through all the designs and years then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And hardanger I also like a lot. So.
Yeah, well, I suppose you get that influence living up north, the Hardanger influence then. Regularly, yeah. That, yeah, I think the further north you get, the more common that is. And regular, I mean, that was just Swedish people in general, or Norwegian people, whatever it is, coming over. What is that? Is it Norwegian?
It's Norway, yeah.
Norway, yeah.
Norway, yeah.
Over by there, yeah. Over where it's cold and wet, yeah.
I think a lot of mine is from, you know, people that I've met over the years that taught these different classes and so on. So that is how I probably became doing Hardanger and Canvas work both, is because of the teachers that were available to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, there seems to be a real active guild and club network in Canada. Just across the entire nation, there just seems to, everybody I've talked to from Canada seems to be very involved in the Embroiderers Association or whatever group it is. There just seems to be a real active network. I don't know if that's fostered by distance and you know, we need to be active to stay together, or what that is.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know the Embroiderers Association of Canada has several chapters, and I belong to a couple of them. One is a face-to-face, and the other one is a online group, so virtual threads. And then the face-to-face group is the Regina Stitchery Guild. So we're all chapters of the Embroiderers Association of Canada, so that kind of, I guess, holds us together. And
so you stay active. That keeps you guys all connected, and of course, the internet really helps.
Yes, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so virtual threads, that's part of the Embroiderers Association?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Oh. And what is that? Is that projects, or is that just online gatherings, or how does that work?
It works through, we go through groups.io, and we have chat rooms in there and different messaging. So you can belong to different groups underneath the virtual threads. There's fun stuff, and then there's your meetings group that is only open during meeting time, and different groups like that. What you'd get is I get a daily digest of emails that come in, and then you just read what's going on. We also have workshops and so on. Of course, they're all online, right?
So online classes then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, online classes or workshops,
through,
yeah.
Yeah, through that group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That seems to be picking up, I think, in other areas of the world and not necessarily the United States yet. What do you say, Gary?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any question that online, I know that was it Silver Needle Society and some others are very active. And that's the kind of thing where it seems like if you don't get connected with it, you don't even know it's happening. But
yeah,
then once you do, you open up this tremendous world of very active stitchers. And that sounds like that's the way it is in Canada too, where once you're involved in that, it's pretty steady diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's always something going on, something to do and new projects and so on and so forth.
When you were crocheting through high school, what is it? You put in your description of yourself that you crocheted through high school, even though it was uncool. I thought that was interesting because I always wonder about people who become designers and do needlework from an early age. And, you know, do you keep it going, or do you reach that spot in high school where that's just not a cool thing for kids to do? And so you hide it at home and don't talk about it, or just what goes on. So you managed to just keep doing it then.
Yeah, I just continued on crocheting throughout high school and as a young adult until I discovered needlework.
Yeah.
Then I didn't crochet for a number of years, but I've picked it up again now. I do it off and on.
Okay, so that's something that sticks with you, and you just, for a diversion, you do it a little bit then.
Yeah. And I think it's the same way with stitching. If you've learned to stitch at an early age, even if you drop it for a few years, you may return to it in adulthood, like when you become more settled in your life or whatever, to take over, have the stitching take over again.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the powerful things. If you learn it as a child, yeah, once it's in your head, lots of people, as they get older, there's some point where it pops back up and off they go with it. So you learn petty point, needle point. How do these other techniques come in? Because your designs are pulled thread, black work, cross stitch. I mean, you do all of it. How do these others come in? Are they just you exploring and?
Pretty much. When I moved to Regina and joined this Regina Stitchery Guild, of course, that opened up a whole new world to me, right? Because before that, I was only I only knew what stitching was available to me through my local needlework store. So when I joined Regina Stitchery Guild, then I started taking all sorts of different classes and everything like that, and just kind of grew from there. My preference is always the counted work as opposed to surface stitching, probably because then I know what size stitches I'm using. no guesswork there.
Right.
Yeah. And lots of times it's more that I get an idea and then try to think what technique will work for that. Like I get an idea formed in my head of a design or something and then try to decide what would be the best technique to use. Canvas to use or material, background material, threads, etc.
So you add these techniques then and they just become tools in your toolbox when it comes to designing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when does the design come in? When does that enter the picture?
My very first design that I did was the Regina Stitcher Guild had a contest and they gave us a geometric pattern sort of thing. And they told us to do something with it, right? And to bring it back. So that was my very first, and I actually made a clock. So it would be like the clusters of hardanger, but not the cutting of hardanger, but I actually made it into a clock.
Oh.
So I won second prize with that. So that encouraged me to go on. And then just over the years, you know, I tried different things and, you know, and then I started Heartfelt Designs in 1997 when I had kind of enough designs to go on.
That's what it was. That's when you started your business, was you had a collection. So you felt like you'd do something with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you do that thinking, all right, it's time to make money out of this hobby, or was it just a way to share your designs? And if some money came in, it was fine.
Yeah. Kind of along that way. Like I still had a day job and so on and so forth. So, that was my bread and butter kind of thing. And, you know, it's always fun to design something, see it develop and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. That first design still valid, or do you look at it and go, oh my, what was I thinking?
No, actually the clock doesn't work in it anymore. And I was debating about what to do with it, if I should make it into something else or get a new clock insides or whatever. It's not in my design line. Like I didn't put it up,
yeah,
make
okay,
a pattern of
okay.
it or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you just wonder, you know, that first design. And then after you do a bunch more, you go back and, oh geez, I really wish I'd done that differently.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that happens all the time. Yeah. Mm. So then, as your business evolves, then you have on your website, you have a selection, but I was surprised on your Etsy page how many more designs you have. You have quite a range.
Yeah, my website is more just there because people think you should have a website, right? But yeah, it does talk about me and different things like that. But if it, you know, if the people are actually interested in the specific designs, if they click on anything, it goes into my Etsy site. So
tell us about your candy dish, your canvas candy dish.
Mm-hmm.
I found that was striking to me when I looked at your Etsy page, that I was like, what is that? And then as I read it, I thought, well, how unique. I've never seen anything like that. So that's just needlepoint, correct, on canvas?
Yeah, it's just your canvas work. And then so if you stitch it flat, of course, right? And then you just kind of pinch up the sides and it forms into a bowl.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very unique. I've never seen anything like that.
Okay. So I got to know, cause that one really stuck out for me. You say you pinch up the sides. What do you kind of fold them up and then tack them together, or how do you do that?
Yeah, I stitched them together. And that particular course I had taught as a correspondence course through the Embroiderers Association of Canada for like 5 years. And some of my students finished them kind of different ways. Like one person put ribbons on hers. And so then when she wanted to, I think she did one for Christmas or something, and then she put ribbons on them. And then when she just opened up, untie the ribbon, and then it would store flat, right? Hmm. So, yeah, so kind of a different way.
Yeah. Well, it's neat. It's a beautiful piece, too. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that one, when I was teaching something for the Regina Stitchery Guild, a scissor case, I told them I'd teach the scissor case. So I had the design, and then the idea for the bowl came to me as I was doing the scissor case. But, you know, I'd already told them. So we did a scissor case, but I told them about the bowl idea. So one of them did her scissor case into a bowl as well. So.
Yeah, I suppose that happens a lot teaching. No matter what you come in with, there's 15 different ideas for how to do it. Yeah.
Right, right. And then other people have their own ideas too, right, of different things and thread colors or whatever. So.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fun part. Yep.
Yeah.
See what people do with it. Do you have an art background that drives this?
Not really, no. I've taken the EAC design course, design for embroidery course, and I've taken tons and tons of workshops over the years and so on. And right now, I'm actually taking a sketching class because I technically can't draw. And so I thought I wanted to learn how to do that.
Oh, that's interesting. That would, this far yeah. down the road and you decide yeah. to see if you could stitch, if you could sketch. Oh.
Yeah. And I've talked to people who have done painting, for example, and they said, no, I can't draw.
Oh. Well,
how do you paint? If you
Yeah. You'd think you'd have to have something.
Yeah.
So how has that gone for you? Has it been a real struggle or?
No, I've actually learned quite a bit with it. So it's still ongoing. I think the last class is November 18th. So, but I'm enjoying it. And part of it, you know, for example, I only have one or two cross stitch pieces because, you know, you have to be able to draw if you have a cross stitch piece, right? Like a picture. Right, as opposed to just a geometric piece. So.
Right. Yeah. 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 So it's all this drawing class is all pencil, just pencil on paper and.
Yeah, pencil on paper and. Yeah. Yep. And I mean, I can draw your like with the pulled thread pattern. I drew that one out. It's just basically vines and flowers. So that's kind of, you know, easy. It's more the more complicated things is what I was hoping to learn how to do. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to also sign up for EAC's color course. They have a color course, correspondence course. These correspondence courses take about 18 months to complete.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the design course took that long as well.
Yeah, those color courses, I keep thinking, because I'm just terrible at color, and I keep thinking I should do a color course, but then I think, I'll just be miserable.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
it's like if you get into it and you can't, you know, you feel like, okay, how come I can't make that look like it's supposed to?
Right, right, yeah. No, that's what I fear. Yeah, yeah. Just be a miserable experience, and I'll just say forget it. Yeah, I noticed with your designs, with all the techniques that you have and that you use in designs, that you don't, as a rule, mix them. Is that intentional or just?
A couple of them I have. So with the hardanger pieces that I sent you pictures of, the one, the New Beginnings, has blackwork in there as well, with some blackwork vines in there. And so that's kind of a combination of the two. And I taught that at a seminar in Prince Edward Island in 2018. And it was interesting because some people took that class because they knew hardanger but wanted to know how to do blackwork and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And then with the, I think I sent you a picture for Prairie Sunrise, and that's a correspondence course that I'm currently doing for Embroiderers Association. And it is, it's got Florentine elements with it and hardanger. Mm-hmm. So just trying to make something a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's good to expose people to different techniques. I think they become better stitchers overall if you learn different techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then in your black work, you're not just married to black. You.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's I believe they define it as one color on one color. So that's more along my lines as I make it one color on one color. It doesn't need to be black on white.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just it. And you can accomplish an awful lot with black work techniques just mm-hmm. by adding a little mm-hmm. color. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It makes them really stand out. Yep. The Heartfelt Designs business then is mm-hmm. is your designs, selling them to shops, selling them on Etsy, and then the other aspect is the teaching.
Yeah, correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you teach more than you design, or it sounds like you're doing an awful lot of teaching.
I've been teaching more lately. My designs, you have to design in order to have something to propose for teaching, right? So right. I've been doing a lot of designing as well. So
stitch other people's work still, or are you just so focused on your own that?
I do stitch other people's work. Yeah. I still take workshops and so on. And when I retired from my day job recently, I decided to buy this great big, huge cross stitch piece for some reason. and so I'm stitching on it, but you know, slowly.
What was that piece?
Yeah, I'd like to know which one it was.
What was it? It was a big maple leaf. I really like maple leaves. It was a big maple leaf and it was kind of brownish, as if it was, you know, turning into the fall. Mm-hmm. And it had veins running throughout it, but it also had a little house in it and a swing set, and I can't remember the designer right off the top of my head, but I found it on Etsy. So if you tried looking in there for maple leaf and cross stitch, it might come up.
So it's a big maple leaf with a scene inside the leaf.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it full coverage?
The inside the maple leaf, it is full coverage. Yeah.
Ugh.
yeah like I said, I work on it sporadically, so
yeah, now we know why. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those people who do those full coverage things, I have so much respect for them, because I don't have that kind of
yeah, it's hard to have even the patience to get through it, right? It's so much stitching, right?
Yeah when they'll go for weeks or even months and they'll finish a page and they'll celebrate mm-hmm. that. It's like, oh, geez. Yeah. Help me.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the parking fascinates me. Do you do that?
The parking?
Parking threads?
Oh, yeah, I do somewhat. Depending what I'm working on. Yeah, generally I just work through one thread and then continue on with the next one.
Okay. The same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, those people have 30 or 40 threads going. It just looks like an absolute rat's nest, and they make it make sense on the front. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I wouldn't be able to do that many on front for sure. Maybe two or three if I was lucky. Yeah.
Way too much. Yeah. And those, and then especially if they've one little X here and one little X there, and they're carrying all those mm-hmm. threads all over. Yeah, and then I look at the back and I go, oh, no thanks.
Yeah.
But when they get them done, they're beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Do mm-hmm. so much shading. So you're doing that on a high count linen?
The maple cross stitch?
Yeah.
I'm doing it on 28 count, I think it is.
So do you have a work area there at your house, a studio? What's your arrangement?
Well, I have a
or just a chair in the corner.
I actually kind of take over the whole house. Oh. No, not really. I actually have a room downstairs where my supplies are and so on and so forth. But then, you know, if I'm working, like I have three designs right now that are waiting to be matted and or laced and that sort of thing. So they're on a table out in our rec room. Right. And then, I actually do most of my stitching upstairs in my chair while I'm watching TV. And then, of course, you know, the designs that I'm putting on the computer. So sometimes I'll have to go back and forth between the chair and the computer to get my piece charted out or something to make sure everything lines up properly.
Yeah. So you stitch your design and then chart it, or the reverse?
A little bit of both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. depending on what it is. I used to just stitch the whole thing and then put it on and then chart it. But now I find that I'm going to more to charting, especially if you're doing hardanger, because you want to make sure it all lines up right. And actually the canvas too, you have to make sure it all lines up, or else you're going to end up having to restitch it along the way.
Always curious about people who do multiple techniques. Is there mm-hmm. another technique on the horizon that you're working on? Are you always reaching out to see if you can expand your arsenal, or are you just comfortable with what you have?
I think that I'm still reaching out, and that's why I take other people's classes as well and courses, right? And because I want to see how they finish something, or how their patterns look, or this or that, right?
And you finish all your own stuff?
I lace it onto mat board and so on, or I finish, you know, however it's going to be finished. But I do get my mats cut for me.
But you do the hard work, the labor work.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it comes to your courses, you know, designing pieces for courses, tell me about your online experience. Is that, from a designer teacher perspective, is that harder to do, easier to do, and how does that work from your perspective?
Online courses, they're actually quite nice to teach, because, you know, you have interaction with the students, but through the computer kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. The first one I taught, I think, was one of VAC's first courses, first online courses that they taught, or they sponsored, I should say. And it went well. It is a little bit difficult if you have somebody who is having problems, because then you have to, you know, do a video or something, or go back and forth more detailed with them, or so that they can understand, because you're not right there showing it to them, right? Mm-hmm. As you would be if you're teaching in a classroom.
Is that, I don't know if it's easier. I mean, you're able to at least establish something they can watch multiple times, which I guess is a plus. But if you're in the classroom, you mm-hmm. can sit right there and no, don't right. go here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it allows people who can't get to a class to participate. So there's a plus yeah. there.
Correct. And the other thing is that people are working on their own time schedule then, right? So it can be anywhere in the world, because they don't have to be at a certain place at a certain time and, you know, flowing to get there or whatever. They're working at their own speed, at their own, at whatever time of day they want to work at, because the chat with you is always there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a real discipline on your end to stay up with the emails and the responses and follow-throughs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know if I could do that. I don't know. Are there things that if I'm taking an online course, are there things that I can do to get more out of it? Are there questions that come up all the time that a little prep work would eliminate?
Not that I can think of, no. Probably the most important thing is to actually finish the piece, right? Because then you've done it.
So. Yeah. Okay. I haven't done an online. Have you done an online course, Vanna?
No, I haven't. How many people do you typically teach on these online courses?
It depends on what you're teaching. I taught the Floral Tranquility to Virtual Threads, and I think that there was about 11 or 12 in there. And then I did another one, Northwest, which I think there was 9 students in that one. Mm-hmm.
So that's like manageable numbers. Like if there was 100, 150 people
right.
taking them, I was certain you'd get many more questions and things like that. I know that with like, I finish for people. So, mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of times I give free tutorials too. And I know a lot of times for me, I get several emails, you know, all the time, because the videos are up and the written tutorials are up, you know, 365 right. days a year. So I'll get the same question 50 times.
Oh.
And, you know, and it's usually answered somewhere in the tutorial. It's just that it seems to me like sometimes people are a little bit more lazy and don't want to search for the answers. Have you had that experience with these online courses, or are, you know, they very, I'm certain if they're taking the course and paying, I'm assuming they pay for the course, that you would be more willing to search and get your answers.
Well, I think that a lot of times it's just people are excited about doing the course too, right?
Right.
And so then they don't want to maybe stop and look to see, you know, if it's been answered before or whatever. I can't say that I really get the same question over and over again or anything. So, but then I haven't had, like you said, if I had 100 or 150 students in the classroom, then it, you may get a lot of the same questions. So, which is also then also makes you think that you should, that you, like if I had that with one particular part of a pattern, and then I would probably redo that part of the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it may help, because like you said, a lot of times people don't kind of read through because they just want to forge on.
That's right. We want to just get started. And yeah, that I find that, you know, and not only with my stuff, but if you're like reading a thread, let's say on Facebook or Instagram or something, you can see the same people ask the same question over and over and over and over. And it's like, wait a minute, people, this was already asked. So I just wonder. And it does get tight. It, I mean, if it's for you as the teacher, if you would have to answer the same questions, you know, 20, 25 times, that's a very time intensive, you know, thing for you, for the person that has to answer it. So,
Yeah. If I got the same question over and over too, I'd probably put a, put it into a Word document or something so I could copy and paste it.
Well, I've been known to do that too.
So.
Yeah, you could have a whole file of
questions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it is understandable. You see it, like Vanna said, in Instagram, and if you've been following the thread and then a question's answered or asked a dozen times, I follow a cycling group. Cyclists over 50, and boy, there'll be some threads, and I just want to just scream. Folks, it's been asked, it's asked and answered, and but you do understand people get in there, they see the initial question, and they don't see the link to view more comments, and they don't, so they don't see their answer in the three responses that are visible, so there they are, and that's what I mean. It must, to do online courses, it must be time intensive and a real discipline to stay on top of that.
Yeah. No, I don't find it too hard at all.
Yeah.
You know, I think part of it is because you are, you know, in your own home kind of thing, and working, you know, you can do it like at your own time schedule. Right.
Right.
So,
I don't know. Sometimes I think that people can be a little impatient with the, you know, when are you going to answer my question? So it's not really, I in my experience, it's not always been on my time table.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But one thing I was wondering, when you do these classes, is the whole class from start to finish uploaded, or do you do it like weekly or monthly? Or
usually it's three or four lessons over every week or every 2 weeks or something.
Oh, wow. So at a pretty fast pace then.
Yeah. And some people are waiting for the next lesson to come. They get that whole first part done and they're waiting for the next part.
Yeah, those electric needle people. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I've tried, how many stitch-alongs have I tried and never finished a one of them? And but it just cracks me up, and I'm amazed. You know, that people will be sitting there. It's a monthly thing. It's the 20th of the month, and they're posting, oh, I can't wait for the next one. And I'm going, geez, I haven't even downloaded the last one. And then there's always one, the minute it's put up, you know, 48 hours later, oh, I'm finished with that. Oh, really? Yeah. Stop. Can't keep up with that.
No kidding.
How are you finding or using all the threads we have today? Is that really opened you up in terms of your designs, in that there's so many options available, or is that really not much of a factor for you? Do you tend to stick with certain threads, and because you know how they perform? How does that play for you in your designs?
I have been sticking more lately with the same designs, and partly because we don't have a local needlework store here.
Oh.
And so you can't really go out and see, you know, or touch and feel and see what this thread is like or that thread, right? Of course, when I go to our seminars or whatever, then you have more access to things. But I love the over-dyed threads and the variegated threads. And so I use a lot of those, the Karen Collection threads, especially the watercolors. And I also use a lot of DMC and Krynek as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's no question. What you're getting with DMC, that's pretty straightforward. Yeah, that's got to be a real problem for you as a designer if you can't go into a store and actually put your hands on threads. Oh,
right.
Boy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I do have a couple of good online places that I can order from and like that are in Canada. And so I will just email them and ask them if they have this in stock or whatever, and they send it and, you know, it works. But then you have to kind of know what you want to, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of too bad because there's so much available these days, but if you don't have access, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
In your hardanger, do you use the pearl cottons or do you use a linen thread for those?
I usually use the pearl cottons, and yeah. I also use the Karen Collection threads. So the watercolors is one strand is equivalent to number 5 pearl cotton.
Mm-hmm.
I do push the envelope a little bit in that sometimes I'll use a thicker thread than what it should actually be used on that 28 count fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I like then the puffiness of it and so on. And there again, it makes it something that's a little bit different.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, being able to put color in hardanger is... I think it's sometimes a lot of fun, and other times I just say, oh, I'd just soon have the white on white.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have one or two designs there that have a lot of color in them. Is that an anomaly for you, or is that where you're headed with your hardanger work?
I quite often use more than one color in the hardanger, or at least I use color. I don't usually do the white on white in hardanger.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And same with the pulled thread. I use colors in that as opposed to just the white.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Yeah. Interesting. Always interesting hearing how you designers go about your business. Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you for inviting me to speak with you.
Yep. All right. Thanks. And thanks to everybody for listening.